I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. In their final week of session, the United States Supreme Court ruled 5-4 to strike down Section 4 of the historic Voting Rights Act. The provisions of Section 4 required federal pre-clearance for certain voting jurisdictions, including 5 counties in Florida, before changing any voting rules or regulations. The decision concerned voting rights activists, including the League of Women Voters. I'll speak with co-presidents of the Orange County League of Women Voters, Michelle Levy and Sandra Powers, about the impact the decision has on Florida and their plan to make sure voters' rights are upheld. Also, Florida ranks second in the US for internet fraud reported to the FBI. I'll talk with researcher and lecturer Bill Kahn about some common scams and why people fall for them. That's ahead on Intersection. Last month, the US Supreme Court struck down a key piece of the Voting Rights Act, Section 4. Now, Section 4 required federal oversight to certain areas of the country where they wanted to change laws involving voting procedure, for example, moving a polling place or redrawing an electoral district. To talk about this decision, I'm joined in the studio by the co-presidents of the League of Women Voters of Orange County, Michelle Levy. Michelle, nice to have you along.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Sandra Powers, thanks for coming in, Sandra.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
While the state of Florida wasn't subject to this oversight, 5 counties were: Hillsborough, Monroe County, Collier County, Hardy, and Hendy County. What can voters in these areas expect under this new decision from the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, this decision is not going to just impact those 5 counties. It's going to impact everybody in the state of Florida. And we are especially concerned because of what happened in 2012. You know, this is not 1965 in Florida, and things are not the way they were then, but we still have situations in which we feel that it's more difficult to vote if you are an African American. And so that's why we saw all of this kind of voter suppression, that we were able to stop a lot of it because of the Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. We were not permitted to third-party registrations, so very important for minority groups, also young people. And it was almost impossible for us to do it under this new law that the legislature passed. And we were able to use Section 4 to stop that. That's one example of what is happening. And, you know, there are other examples, too. Sandra, you want to talk about some of the others?
Well, the voter rolls were purged in, I think it was 2010, and they were purged by the thousands. And it turned out that many of these people, in fact, were registered voters. And all of these people were reinstated, most of them anyway, but unfortunately not in time for the election. So they were not, their votes were not there. There were polling places reduced, and with an increased population in the state of Florida, we in fact need more polling places, not fewer polling places. And they need to be in places that are accessible to people who don't necessarily have a car. There shouldn't be 4 and 6 hour waits, because this is something that we want to do, and it shouldn't be lessened in any way. I think one of the most important things that Michelle said was that we were discouraged from doing third party voter registration, making those efforts. However, since when we got clearance after the League of Women Voters of Florida and others brought suit, we were able to begin more or less July the 1st of 2012, and Orange County alone, through our efforts, registered over 1,000 people who were not registered or who did not know that you could not change your address at the polls. You had to change your address early on, which would have disenfranchised you had you been there and had to change your address.
Now, Sandra, you bring up the issue of long lines at the polling mm-hmm. places. Haven't some of these concerns been addressed by the legislature this year, though?
Well, we hope they have been addressed. We hope that all of these things have been put to rest. However, there were safeguards in place via Section 4 that said we could then look to the federal government to say, see what's going on here? now those rules and restrictions have been taken away, so Florida could do it again.
Well, let me ask you this, Michelle. Is there some kind of knock-on effect from the fact that this has been rolled back, this legislation?
Well, it is going to impact the whole state, not just those five counties, and I think that's really important. You know, there are other states where the whole state was not impacted by Section 4. There are places in the Midwest. There were places in New York that also were impacted, and that's because they had a history of voter discrimination. But the importance of those five counties was that we had a vehicle in Florida to say, hey, we need the federal government to have some oversight here, to take a look. And then it stopped the process. Now we would have to go to Section 5. And Section 5 says if you can show if you can demonstrate that voters were discriminated against, then we will take action. The problem with Section 5 is it's after the fact. So after an election, if we can show all these people were disenfranchised, well, then, you know, maybe they would make some changes. But the problem is we need to act before an election.
Well, Sandra, let me ask you, what's your sense of how Congress is going to move on this? They've been asked to take another look at Section 4. What's your sense of what's going to happen next?
I happen to be an eternal optimist, and I like to think that they will take another look. And I hope that they will begin to recognize that geographically there is a tendency for certain parts of the United States to set up more roadblocks to voter ease. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a map that shows most of those states. They happen to be mostly across the South and edge up in the west part of the United States. So I would hope that they would take a look if enough evidence can be presented to them that voter discrimination is true in a good portion of the United States, so that they would reconsider.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, let me ask you now, how can organizations like the League of Women Voters and your chapter here in Orange County stop discriminatory practices without Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act?
Well, what we intend to do is what we've always done. The League of Women Voters is about voter registration, and we are going to continue to register voters. So that's going to always continue to be what we're all about, voting and the importance of voting, and not to make voting more difficult. Voting is a right. We have some people in Congress who seem to think it's a privilege and we should make it as difficult as possible. Well, it's a right. And most nations throughout the world understand that right and have higher percentages of voters than we have. You know, one thing that the court had said was that there's a higher percentage of African Americans voting now than very often white people are voting. But that's because the Voting Rights Act has worked. We take it away and who knows what's going to happen. I mean, it's like, why fix it if it's not broke? It's working. That's what it shows. It's working.
May I just add one group to that? We have people in Florida, young people in Florida, who go to college, mm-hmm. and they're registered to vote. But if they show up at the polls and they have their student ID showing that they're in Gainesville, but their home address may be in Jacksonville, there can be issues about whether they're registered and whether they have to go back to their hometown to actually cast their vote. Now, the last thing we want to do is discourage a young adult who took upon themselves the responsibility to register to vote and then in any way block their ability to vote at the polls.
Well, is there a quick and easy solution to that? Where should somebody who's registered, whose hometown is in one county but who might be studying in another county, where should they go to vote?
I'm not sure, Michelle, if that was ever straightened out.
They should register to vote. If they're going to be, let's say they're coming, they live in another state and, you know, that's going to be a difficult issue. But if mm-hmm. they live within the same state, mm-hmm. then it should be where the college is, because that's where they're going to be an election day. Mm-hmm. And that's where they should be allowed to vote. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's issues there. There are issues with felons. We have other issues related to voting that we're going to continue to work on. But our major concern right now is what can we do to ensure that we get back some kind of federal oversight of election protections, because quite frankly, Florida has been the poster child for it's been an embarrassment you know, when you live in Florida, and they say, what's wrong with you? You know, why can't you get it right? I mean, 2000 and then again last year. So we really have to make sure that, you know, we have a legislature that doesn't slide back and that we have a Congress who's going to take action. Is it going to be difficult? Yes, it's going to be very difficult, but that's something that we need to pursue.
Well, Michelle Levy, your colleague, your co-president here, Sandra Power, says she's an eternal optimist. What's your sense of how Congress will address this portion of the Voting Rights Act?
I'm not quite as hopeful as Sandra is about what's going to happen in Congress. It's a dysfunctional Congress at this point. They can't seem to get anything done. But, you know, we have to continue to work, and that's where the focus of our – we have 460 members now, and the focus is going to be get in touch with your congressman, get in touch with your senator, because that's where the focus has to be now.
I'm Matthew Petty. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm talking to Michelle Levy and Sandra Powers. They are the co-presidents of the League of Women Voters of Orange County. We're talking about the core piece of legislation of the Voting Rights Act, Section 4, that was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court recently, and what the potential implications are for the state of Florida and Central Florida as well. And you can get in on the conversation on online. You can go to our Twitter page. You can also join us on Facebook and send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Well, President Obama said he was, quote, deeply disappointed with this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, while Governor Rick Scott said, on the other hand, he was pleased with the ruling, saying, quote, anytime we have the opportunity to make our own decisions, I think that's great for our state. Do you think these counties where they have had this federal oversight in the past, can they be trusted to take account and oversee this voting in a fair and equitable fashion going forward?
Well, we'll see, but I don't have a lot of confidence in that. And as I said, we'll see. You know, the supervisor of election in Orange County, Bill Cowles, has just been fantastic in terms of working with us. We have other supervisors. In Leon County, we have a wonderful supervisor of election who really, you know, have made every effort that they can to make sure that there are as many voting places as possible and that we can make this an easy process. All I can say is that we, you know, time will tell what the impact is going to be. But, for example, in the state of Texas, the governor of Texas already has taken action and said we're going to, you know, reinstate our Texas ID law. Now, in Florida, we already have an ID law, so that's not going to impact us. So we'll wait and see. It's an election year coming up for Governor Scott in 2014. And so there's lots of things that are going to be happening. We shall see what the long-term effect of this is going to be, because I'm not sure yet.
Sandra, what do you think? Do you think these counties, Hillsborough, Monroe, Collier, Hardy, and Hendy, can they be trusted to go ahead and conduct these elections in a fair manner?
One would think that in the last 40 years, people would have grown and understood the issues of voting rights and expanded opportunity at every turn. But it seems as though here in the state of Florida, and we have evidence right here in Orange County, that these things can be undone in a moment. And it's my opinion that the Supreme Court wasn't paying attention to what's been going on in the state of Florida for the past 2 years. And the evidence of what has happened in the state of Florida combined with other states, I don't know what they were reading that they would suddenly say among themselves, or it certainly is a majority, oh, well, Section 4 isn't needed anymore because these people have come a long way. I think that the fact that a city has perhaps an African-American mayor is a wonderful thing, but it does not mean that that entire community supports having equal opportunity for the vote under all circumstances.
I want to ask you, too, about Congress. Now, we talked a little bit about this just now. Do you think Congress is up for the task? Will they get their act together and get this through?
Time will tell if they get their act together. It's just, we shall see. It depends upon the kind of pressure that is put on them. And, we've started right away a letter campaign, to make sure that all of our congressmen, and we're especially concerned about the House, not so much the Senate, at least take this issue up, because we think that the Supreme Court has kind of left it in Congress's lap and said, hey, you know, you go ahead and change it. But you understand in 2006, it was almost unanimous. They went ahead and reauthorized it. Mm-hmm. So what's changed so dramatically between now and 2006? Well, one thing that's changed is we've had states that have had all these voter suppression laws. So once again, I just don't understand what the Supreme Court was thinking when they decided, oh, everything's fine and dandy now in these states. You know, we don't have to worry about these states. Mm-hmm. So it's yes. a major concern.
And part of the league's work henceforth will be to encourage Congress to get their act together and restore the Voting Rights Act, Section 4.
Do you see it as a finite thing, though? Do you think there will be a point when it can be withdrawn or just let go completely?
That would be my dream. And by the way, that is why in 1965 these things were put into law in order to correct many, many, many years of discrimination and lack of opportunity.
And looking at Florida, too, I mean, your co-president there talks about the fact that Florida is sometimes seen as an embarrassment when you look at national elections. Of course, 2000 was probably the most famous example of that. But even
you mean the hanging chads?
Even last year, with the long lines at the ballots and the issues about reduced voting days, I mean, is Florida? Are we going to keep seeing these kind of issues crop up? Do you think? Is it a matter of groups like the League of Women Voters and others putting continued pressure on, or will there be a point where it's simply? It is easier for people to vote and that these issues don't pop up so frequently.
Well, I hope so. You know, it is an embarrassment. I had my my brother who lives in California, you know, say, Florida, what's going on there? You know, so it is an embarrassment. And I would hope that, and I think part of that embarrassment is why we got such positive legislation from the Florida legislature this year. So, you know, I would hope that there would be significant changes, and I would hope that Congress would go ahead and reauthorize this. It's a big disappointment for us. It's not that surprising. We sort of were thinking that this might happen, but, you know, we just can move forward and do what we do.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we did this past year. Under the leadership of Deirdre and our board in Tallahassee, they came together and they said, we can't change everything, but there are certain things we can do. And then they sent forth what we should and could do, start our third-party voter registration, inform the public, speak out, encourage people to vote, learn things such as how we can encourage our felons to get back their voting rights. Many of them have them, but they don't have a clue how to go about restoring them.
Is that a popular idea? I get the sense that some people in Florida might not be so keen on that.
They may not be so keen, but remember, these people are citizens. And we're not always keen on everybody, mm-hmm. but we can't deny them their rights. And Michelle said something I think that was really important a few minutes ago. She said, voting is about your right, not about your privilege. Your privilege and your right are taken away, in fact, if you are a felon. But when your rights can be restored, they need to be restored. It is your right as a citizen of the United States of America to go to the poll and vote your conscience.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's been such a demographic change in Florida. There really has been. And I would think that both parties, instead of trying to prevent these people from voting, would go after these people, would say, hey, these are issues that we are supportive of and you need to vote for us, instead of trying to figure out ways to disenfranchise them. Because Florida is changing. It is changing, and it's going to continue to change. And we'll just have to continue, as I said, to work to register as many people as we can and to work with our congressional representatives
yes.
and make sure that they, you know, follow up on that. And that's all we can do.
And we go to Tallahassee to try to put that in effect when they have legislative session. This year it was in April, and Michelle and I were there. We go to speak to our representatives and we go to speak to our senators and we want to encourage them. We give them our stand on issues. We ask them to consider them. That's all we can do. Then we hope for the best.
And I want to point out that we are nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. You know, we never support candidates. We're only concerned about issues, and our key issue is voting rights. That's our key issue. That's what the League of Women Voters is all about.
Yeah.
I've been speaking to co-presidents of the League of Women Voters of Orange County, Michelle Levy. Michelle, nice of you to join us.
Thank you.
And also her co-president, Sandra Powers. Sandra, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Up next, a conversation with Bill Kahn, a researcher and lecturer on scams, cons and frauds. Last year, the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center received nearly 3,000 complaints of fraud, accounting for more than $500 million in financial loss. And Florida ranked second in the amount of internet fraud reported to the agency in that same year. But frauds and scams aren't just limited to the internet. And to talk more about scams, cons and frauds, I'm joined in the studio now by Bill Kahn. Bill is a researcher and lecturer in scams, cons and frauds, and he runs the Encyclopedia of Greed online resource for fraud prevention. Bill, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure being here.
Now, you say that scams and frauds are on the rise in the United States. Now, Florida is quite high on the list of states in the U.S. where the FBI gets complaints about online scams. Can you explain why Florida is such a hotspot for fraud?
Florida, having an awful lot of elderly people, especially people who may or may not have access to the kinds of things that would tell them what's happening, I think that's probably one of the primary reasons. Now, elderly is not the primary source of people who are being scammed, but in Florida, elderly tends to make up a great deal of them. According to the FBI, the biggest class would be the 20 to 40-year-old. They represent about 50%, 25% of the elderly, but you hear more about the elderly than you do about the other class. The elderly tend to have more discretionary money to do things. They were brought up in a society where you trusted people. For example, when they were kids, the Fuller Brush Man came to their front door to sell brushes. Listen, it was a legitimate business with a vacuum cleaner or something. Today, unfortunately, it's very difficult to trust anybody when they come to the front door or call you on the phone, for that matter.
As far as internet frauds and scams go, though, I'm sure in some cases folks who are a little bit older might not necessarily be hooked up to the internet or use it a lot, so they're also vulnerable to other kinds of scams?
The kinds of scams that I would see a lot of would be the telephone scam, where you have a person calling up with either an emergency call, like a typical one is somebody has been hurt. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs money to get out of jail. Something where you have an emergency, like your husband has been in an accident. We need to get him to the hospital. Give me your credit card so we can register him in the hospital. Those kinds of things where the person doesn't have to have internet.
Now, the scam you were talking about where somebody calls up and says they've been in an accident and they're a relative and they need some money, that's something that pops up on Facebook as well. You see variants of that.
It's pretty common. The most common one is someone has been hurt or I'm in jail or something like this. And so those are a classical type of thing that you have to be very careful about. Mm-hmm. Especially they will say that they're out of town. They'll write it in Facebook. They're going out of town. Never, never tell anyone on any media that you're leaving. It's okay to tell them about the trip after it's taken place, but never before it's taken place.
I think, though, for the 20 to 40-year-old, that's a pretty hard habit to break. People love to be able to post photographs of where they are in the moment. You know, there's not just Facebook, there's Twitter, Instagram, all these kind of instant media. And as you say, there's a dark side to putting that information up there and telling people what you're doing as you're doing it.
You're bragging before it happens. If you want to tell people about a wonderful trip you've had, do it after, not before. That's where all of the information is gathered. Mm-hmm. There's a tremendous amount of information that a person can get.
Do you wonder, though, does it strike you that maybe scams and cons are being reported more now? Because it seems like there is quite a lot of publicity about it. You do see news stories about scams that are going on. The police will often put out bulletins about particular scams to be aware of. Are people becoming more aware of these and perhaps therefore the reporting of scams is going up?
Well, I think that people have less money in certain instances And because they have less money available to them, the scams and frauds take more from them. And therefore, they have to go someplace. But I will tell you that an awful lot of people don't even know where to go, don't know who to call. For example, in Orange County, the people should be calling the state attorney's office, the fraud division there, to report a fraud, and then action will be taken.
Are they doing that?
Not as much as they should, because most people don't know. I mean, there are many organizations to call, and they don't know. Yes, the newspaper comes out with this type of fraud, and they are very, very specific. When I lecture about frauds, I do not lecture about specifics. I will give it as an example, but I typically talk about the characteristics of it so you get a much broader idea of the scam.
Mm-hmm. For somebody who's been scammed, though, is there sometimes some kind of stigma about the fact that they've been ripped off that might make them perhaps less likely to report it?
Yeah, that is one particular case. But once someone has been ripped off once, their name gets on a list, if you would. It's the how can I get somebody else list, or how can I get them again? And they continually work it. Let's assume someone has been taken for a certain amount of money. They'll get a call from an organization that says, we can help you get your money back. And all of these organizations depend upon a fee up front.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my rules of thumb is if someone wants money up front for something, don't give any money up front.
Now, one of the more famous email scams that's been going around in the last few years has been the quote-unquote Nigerian prince scam. Somebody claims to be part of the royal family from Nigeria. They need the email recipient to help getting funds out of the country. Is this something that's still going on now?
Now, you would think that people would not fall for that. Now, in the last probably 6 months, I'd be worth about $500 million, that's with a B, from people telling me they want to put money in my account and what have you. And yes, all of these scams, there are millions and millions of dollars lost every single year for things that you would think, that's crazy. Why would somebody do that? Now, for young people, you say, well, how do young people get scammed? One of the way they get scammed would be, let's say there's a young person who would like to meet a young lady. And so on the internet, he gets a picture of some beautiful model. They're not saying it's a model, but they're just saying it's them. And all of a sudden, this woman falls in love with this man. Make-believe love, but it sounds really good. And then she starts off with, I'd love to come over and meet you. You know, we've had such wonderful discussions together. I don't have enough money for airfare. Could you send me airfare money? Or I've landed up in the hospital. Could you help me out? And you'd say, why would people fall for that? There are a lot of lonely people out there, and it doesn't have to just be young people. It could be older people.
Mm-hmm. What got you started on the path of educating people about frauds and scams?
Well, about 2 years ago, I was interested to see if something was a scam. And I looked it up, and I had to read, at least a page to two pages before I got to the essence of it. And I said, you know, this is crazy. Most people are not going to spend all that time. So I said, I wonder what would happen if I started to reduce those pages to a one-liner. And it ended up, after reading 300-400 pages, I reduced it to one or two liners, and my website basically goes like that, where you can get the information very, very quickly. And that's what got me started on that.
I've been speaking to Bill Kahn. Bill Kahn is a researcher and lecturer in scams, cons, and frauds, and how to avoid them. He runs the Encyclopedia of Greed, and his website is called stopthescam.org. Bill, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.